everyone. As a member of the leadership of the Congress of the United States, it is my official privilege to welcome so many of you to Washington, D.C., to the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. I join my colleagues and associate myself with the remarks of those from Congress who have spoken before me. That's officially. Personally, it is my very personal pleasure to be here with each and every one of you because I was here 50 years ago. So who among you is going to be the Speaker of the House, the President of the United States, or whatever? You're a beautiful sight to behold. And at that time, 50 years ago, we heard Dr. King inspire us with the I Have a Dream part of his speech. The part that, though, was the call to action was the fierce urgency of now part of his speech. In that time, Dr. King says, we refuse to take the tranquility drug of gradualism. We must move forward. And forward we will. If it was fierce then, urgent, it certainly is now. 50 years ago, there were only 5 African-American members of the House of Representatives. There was no Congressional Black Caucus. Today, there are 43 members. We want more, but there are 43 African-American members. And they are led by Congresswoman Marsha Fudge, whom you've heard from, and they are the conscience of the Congress. And in that Black Caucus, we have the privilege of serving with John Lewis, some of us, for over 25 years in the Congress. And aren't we proud of that? But I also want to mention that 50 years ago, though he was not a member of Congress at the time, that John Conyers was one of 3 people invited to the White House to meet with President John F. Kennedy following the Civil Rights March, the March for Jobs, Justice, and Freedom, who is with us. 50 years ago, we had the first Catholic president in the White House. Today, we have the first African-American president and the first African-American first family leading our country so beautifully from the White House. You know, we come together here at a time when there is a monument to Reverend Martin Luther King on the Mall. Here he sits with presidents of the United States so appropriately. We have a day set aside as a national holiday to celebrate his birthday. But he would want us to celebrate him, his birth, and his legacy by acting upon his agenda, by realizing the dream, by making the minimum wage a living wage, by having not just family and medical leave, but paid sick leave for our workers, by having quality, affordable child care so that our families can be, the power of women can be unleashed in our economy and in our society. And you know what? This just happens to be Women's Equality Weekend. When women succeed, America succeeds. When people of color succeed, America succeeds. He would also want us to be fighting for voting rights. Certainly, we must pass a bill in the Congress to correct what the Supreme Court did. But we must also be sure that every person who is eligible to vote can vote and that their vote would be counted. When I was here 50 years ago, people said, oh, and that includes voting rights for the District of Columbia. When I was here 50 years ago, people say, what do you remember most? And the music is playing, so I'll say this. Dr. King said this 50 years ago. The music of the march, the harmony of the civil rights movement, the notes of Dr. King's inspirational words must continue to us, inspire us to compose, as Dr. King said on that August afternoon, a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. Are you ready to beat the drum for that beautiful symphony of brotherhood? Are you ready to realize the dream? Thank you all very much.
Ha, 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 ha. Okay. And that was a level of intellectual contribution that we got. And that was probably at the high end of it. None other than the self-serving Nancy Pelosi, who President Obama has promised he will return to her, I suppose, her divinely ordained spot as leader of the House. Now, you of course sensed the condescension there. Are you ready to beat the drum? I was here 50 years ago. Okay, we never knew about what capacity she was there, but she was there 50 years ago. And something you would notice quite immediately is that she advanced her issue all the way through. It's about women's, the unleash the power of women. Hello, hello. A nod to Hillary Clinton in 2016. You know, I couldn't watch the entire thing. I just refused to have my blood pressure just go up that high. But of the bits that I saw and returned to later via C-SPAN, I can tell you that I don't like to say I told you so or to boast about being able to land right on the head of the snail, but this is correct. I did say this was going to be an exercise, an open exercise in just plain contempt. It's good that people would want to observe the 50th anniversary of the historic march in 1963, March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. But this was like a personal franchise. This was a franchise of the Al Sharpton's National Action Network. He was co-convener in chief, along with Martin Luther King III, who was decidedly underwhelming in what he had to say. But it all was a major effort for Sharpton particularly, to demonstrate to the Democratic Party that he is now the chief person in charge. You want to reach the black community, you come through me. He self-anointed with the complicity of Martin Luther King III. I don't think Martin Luther King III has yet figured out how he was used as a perfect prop to basically legitimize leadership of Al Sharpton in this arena. So Sharpton, as of this week, is now the go-to guy for the Democratic Party and the Republicans as well, because, of course, it's going to be a bidding war as to see who would or how he would give access to the, quote, black community, unquote, and, of course, at what price, because it always involves a price. I find it revolting, personally. This whole thing revolting. But let's hear a bit of Reverend Sharpton's speech, just a little bit. Give you an idea, and I'll come back again right after that.
So we come to say that we are leaving here as they did 50 years ago. And we're going to do nonviolently what is necessary to put the climate in this country that will lead to a Voting Rights Act. We're going to do what is necessary to do what we have to do nonviolently, to have a jobs bill based on the infrastructure. We're going to register voters in each state. We're doing town hall meetings in the next 60 days. We're going to target numbers and target districts. We need to bring new voters to the polls based on the principles and objectives of the movement. I don't know much about cooking, but I did learn how to make pancakes. My mama taught me all you got to do is put down the stuff and just flip it over. I don't know that much about politics, but I know how to do some flipping. And we need to flip some folk in Congress next year. So as we march today, we march with a determination to let you know that we don't have amnesia. We did not forget the price that's paid. We fought too hard. Our parents shed too much blood. There was too many nights in jail for you to take our vote from us now. Our vote was soaked in the blood of martyrs, and you can't take it from us like we don't know who we are. We earned the right to vote with protest, and we will regain what we lost in the Supreme Court with a protest that is focused and on its way. There was another dreamer as I close. A dreamer in the Bible called John. John looked up and said, I see a new heaven. I see a new earth. All things are passed away. I come to tell you, I know why they're screeching and hollering and talking crazy, because old America has passed away. All America that only worked for white males have passed away. All America that only worked for English speaking have passed away. All America that tell you who to sleep with but don't put food in the kitchen has passed away. All things have passed away. We see a new America. We see an America of equality, of justice, of fairness. We march because we're going to bring a new America, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice, not for some, not for who you choose, not for who you like, but for all. We believe in a new America. It's time to march for a new America. It's time to organize for a new America. It's time to register and vote for a new America. We're on our way. We're on our way. We're on our way.
Yes, yes, yes. We're on our way. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you. Thank you. We are on our way. You're on our way out is where we are. And that's the fact. Now, let me bring these two people together in terms of the ideologies and positions that they represent, because they typified the charade that occurred this past weekend. Nancy Pelosi, of course, is not at all connected to the African-American community or any other community of color, for that matter. She's connected to her personal ambition. And that has been made abundantly clear. Because if she had known anything about that community, she would have known that she committed an error, in fact, when she said, oh, look at how many dark people we have in Congress, as if it were an accomplishment. And it, in fact, is not. Here's the irony, folks. The irony is that after slavery, this country, during the period called Reconstruction, had more African Americans elected nationwide than at any other time in history. That's a fact, including in the U.S. Senate. We can start there. We had more African American representation in this country after the most crushing period, the greatest denial of human rights, than at any other time, including up to now, in this country. So there has not been progress This is not about progress. And numbers, as we know, as we have learned, mean nothing. Precisely at a time, I keep saying this over and again, precisely at a time, for example, in New York City, where you have a majority non-white legislative body called the City Council, precisely at a time that we have more representation, we have less power. And that is because leaders, quote unquote, the self-anointed kind, and those elected because of a kind of psychotic behavior on the part of black voters to inflict wounds on themselves. I think today you could liken it to cutting, people who cut themselves simply to bleed. The voters today are acting like cutters, electing some of these folks. They're jokers. 50 years ago, a march occurred in Washington, D.C., aimed principally at tackling two critical issues. The top two, among about a list of 10 issues, the top two were jobs and freedom. But the march didn't just happen in 1963. We need to remind folks that this march originally was planned to occur in 1941. So all of the presidents that have come since then, 13 presidents have come and gone, Democrat and Republican alike. And they all have managed to not do a damn thing about it. So from an analytical point of view, this is not too deep, one could reasonably conclude that it has made no difference whatsoever to the objective conditions of life for African Americans and other oppressed minorities, but we talk about African Americans for a specific reason. For one, they organized the march in the first place. And they were the ones doing the heavy lifting. But the reason that this is significant is to say that it is immaterial who's in the White House, because the standard is what is held to. Now I'm going back to 1941. FDR, and then Truman, two Democrats, one after the other. Then comes a whole string, Republican and Democrat alike, liberal and conservative alike. It made no difference. Party designation made no difference at all to the objective conditions, quality of life for this oppressed people. And we hear the prating of an Al Sharpton, who ought to know better, that trying to convince people again, this is the act that is unforgivable, to try and tell people in the face of what they're suffering, in the face of what they know, and not just for last week or since Barack Obama took office, I'm talking about forever. This is the historical memory that we have. This is an oppressed group. Marching has been done. Talking has been done. Uprisings have been done. And Democrat and Republican alike have managed just the same to keep the lid on righteous objection. But you hold a big demonstration, it proves, number one, you're somebody, you can mobilize people. You are the next generation of king. But you'd notice the chasm in intellectual grounding for between King and Sharpton. It's, you know, it's like comparing Nancy Pelosi with Barbara Jordan. So the task now, as we come close to the midterm elections next year, and certainly in 2016, the presidential election, is to now groom the black community for its anticipated role of being lemmings. You will do as we tell you to do. In the name of King, and they invoke and they put in all that vibrato. In the name. In the name of justice. And all of that stuff. Forget it. It's just talk. What they want is to use the African American community, particularly, as leverage. The numbers are to be used as leverage. Nothing more, nothing less. Just leverage. So that I personally can get what I want out of this. And number one, it's always, almost always involves money. But it also now involves more than that. Because in the same way that Barack Obama is looking to shape a legacy as president, there are those looking to leave something of another kind of impression as to who they are and what they have been in the so-called continuum of struggle. It's ruthless ambition. And in the name of ruthless ambition, everybody is a potential sacrifice. You'll notice that no coverage of this event really talked substantively about what is at issue here. Everybody read it kind of correctly as it worked out. So they gave it short shrift. They made it look significant because they were able to go back to the newsreels and tell you, this is how it looked in 1963, and let's compare pictures. In 1963, look how the mall looked, and in 2013, this is how it looked. And in 1963, they had X number of speakers, and in 2013, they had this silly, silly stuff. There is no meat there, and everybody knows it. They did not go to Washington to confront and expose this administration. They didn't go there for war. They didn't go to Washington, D.C. to lay the gauntlet down. They didn't go there prepared for a fight, which is long overdue. They didn't go to cuss the president out and cuss the Congress out. They were there to talk about, well, you know, we'll do this nonviolently and we will march. We will march. Black folks are so good at marching. We should establish a university, the University of Marching. You want to know how to march? You come to this university. We teach you how to march. But of course, marching is not what's going to get us ahead, is it? The same people who are now appearing on the weekend, you see the television screens on, and they're waxing philosophic in the sun. They simply have failed. And didn't just fail for a week or a month. These are recidivists. These are people who fail as par for the course, intentional failure. They do not have the bravery to actually take on a fight. So they do the next best thing, which is, I will leverage whatever power of influence I have for my immediate interests and concerns. I will set myself up as the gatekeeper between white America and the white, you know, Congress and the black folks who are suffering. So all parties are going to have to come through me to get things done because I'm now the big cheese. It's all about me. I remind you, conservatively speaking, this fight started in 1941. We know, of course, if we were to really get into the history of it, this fight started the minute black folks were brought here. But let's say 1941. The question that needs to be asked is, since 1941 until 2013, what has been the cumulative effect of marginalization, of ostracism, of ignoring this community? What has been the cumulative price paid in terms of achievement, in human capital lost, in hopes and dreams and aspirations dashed? How many generations of black children basically have just not at all succeeded in attaining their own goals? While these people are talking about, you know, playing footsie with the White House and with Congress, these people are not ready for a fight. They're not interested in fighting. You need violent interaction. I don't mean bombs and bullets. I mean consistent evidence that you are fighting. You're not settling for diplomatic resolution and then Barack Obama says, okay, I'll tweak it 2 more degrees, and then you hurriedly call a press conference and issue press releases to tout your achievement. It is sad to say, we have to compare. Black folks during Reconstruction, right after the Civil War, in the heat and the immediate aftermath of slavery in this country, were far more effective than these jokers that we have today. That's an indictment. And if they had any integrity at all, this convocation would have been for one specific purpose, which is to openly confess their failures. To admit their failures and their concessions. And say, we resolve. We really cannot do this anymore. We are sorry we have done this to you and to us as a people. And we pledge henceforth that we're going to the mat. Instead, they have the nerve, the temerity to get up there and presume to prepare a people for further instruction of what it is we have to do. The fact is, the black community has done everything it has been asked to do, and then some. We should elect a black president. Okay, it's done. Now what? Who is going to get up there? Which leader, which elected person do you know has regularly stood up and said, this president is a total loss. This president is not the right one. This president is not serving us and our interests. This party no longer is relevant to us. There's no reason to continue with the Democratic Party. Who is saying that? They've been bought hook, line, and sinker by this president who believes that his entire life rests in the approval rating of whites in America, as if that's ever going to happen. So he slavishly services that constituency at the expense and says that, you know, I'm the president of all Americans. Well, of course you are. You didn't say that when you were running. You didn't say, I want to be the candidate of all America. You knew exactly where to go to ask people, I need your vote, because without your vote, I can't go anywhere. You got it once. You fell down on the job. Big time. You are failing. You have failed. Conceded. And in fact, you know, the black and progressive communities need to be real clear. Don't waste your time. I remind you once again, it was during the Reconstruction period, that is to say, when Republicans were in charge, it was during that period that we had more blacks elected to office than at any other time in history, including the U.S. Senate. So this blind allegiance to the Democratic Party, you should have a pretty long memory. But instead, black folks are cultivated to have a kind of intentional ignorance. And that's what we saw this weekend. They're taking us back to 1963. Your memory can't handle more years than that. Because if they were to take you back further than that, they will have to tell you that the Democratic Party was the party of slavery and oppression in this country. The Democratic Party was the party of the Klan. The Democratic Party in liberal robes, like Kennedy, like Clinton, even Carter. The Democratic Party, going all the way back to FDR in 1941. Black folks rose up in 1941 because they were fighting for this country to export democracy via bombs and bullets to other countries. And the black men and women who served in the military at that time could not even walk the streets as American citizens. That's how far back it goes. But of course, cultivated to have conveniently short memories, cultivated to react to emotion. So they put these folks up there. They're going to talk to you about John in the Bible. Yeah. And that is going to keep you satisfied that you're getting kicked in the teeth. Your children are going to poor schools. You have no job. You have no medical coverage. You can't live in decent housing. And you're supposed to think about the Bible and John, which, by the way, is yet another means of oppression. That's how black folks were oppressed. A lot of the people all over the world oppressed by the Bible. What is to be done? The community, the oppressed communities have to recalibrate. They have to understand that the time has come to get rid of this parasite called the Democratic Party. Get it out of your system. Do a kind of flush. Flush your system out. And from this point, if you didn't do it before, from this point on, understand that nobody dictates to you what your political allegiance ought to be. But you have a duty to yourself to make sure that you take particular action against any force that oppresses you. This party, the Democratic Party, is such a force. Get out of it. Run away from it. And make sure it collapses under the dead weight of ignoring this particular community. Break the ties. Move on. Find something else. Start something else. Create an entirely different agency for your interests and support that. I liken the African American community to the booster rockets on the space shuttle. You know, the space shuttle, the main thing is to get it into orbit. And these booster rockets expend extraordinary energy. That's what they were designed for. Their job is to get this payload into orbit. And they burn up all that energy just to get it there. And the minute it's there, boom, it jettisons the booster rockets. They're no longer useful. They no longer serve a purpose. They don't even care where they land. The payload is in orbit, and a whole different set of systems take over. They don't even remember that there were booster rockets. We need to stop this cycle of abuse, because any reasonable person would be able to say, I mean, let's just do some basic math. From 1941 to 2013, that's three quarters of a century. Three quarters of a century. And people are still talking, we're going to march and we're going to take evolutionary steps, the steps of gradualism. We will gradually, by and by, we shall march, and by, we shall hold hands and nonviolently redeem America. Because now it's not enough that you're suffering. You're taking on the added burden now. You're supposed to expiate Americans' demons. The demon of racism is now your job. The demon of injustice is now your job. The demon of inequality now becomes your job. Nobody's giving it to you. You, like Carter G. Woodson says, if a person is accustomed to coming through the back door, if there is no back door, he will make one. If you condition somebody's mind right, all these years, three quarters of a century lost in prayer and hope, that if you love the enemy hard enough and long enough, they will change and see the error of their ways, and they will grapple you unto their breasts with hoops of steel. You're a nut if you think that. You better look to your interests. And strictly to your interests. That's what politics is all about. It's about me and my folks winning what we need. Don't give this Democratic Party one more inch. It has failed utterly and completely. Get out of it. Serve notice that you are no longer part of this game. You will not be used. You will not be proxy to your own self-annihilation. You will not participate in this farce. You will not legitimize illegitimacy. You won't do it. Get out of the party right away. Immediately. Start it among your friends. Tell them this is not right. This is not going to happen. Not this time. This is where, you know, as they said, to draw a line in the sand. You draw a line. Sit down. You wouldn't even cross it, let alone allow somebody else to cross it. Get serious. Because you're fighting for your life. You're going to tell me a community that has upwards of 90% unemployment among its teenagers, and we're there talking about all the things we're going to register people to vote and bring them into the Democratic Party? Are you crazy? Unemployment for African American adults is more than twice the national average, and we're being conservative. And you're going to tell me you're going to now begin a vigorous voter registration drive so as to bring more folks into the Democratic Party because they will pay you. You're seeing thousands of schools nationwide being shut down today, this very day. Thousands of children in Chicago are heading to schools of questionable achievement. They're being shuffled around just as numbers because the Democratic mayor, the former chief of staff of the Democratic president, has shut down 50 schools just this year alone. And you're going to tell me you are now going to embark on a vigorous campaign to bring more black folks into a party when this is how they're treating your children? You have no self-respect if you allow that to happen. You have no health care. You have no job. And you've been at it for 75 years. I'm just talking, folks, up until 1941. I'm giving them all that credit from the 15th Amendment. We will disregard that for purposes of our discussion. I'm being very generous, putting our starting point at 1941. You want to be part of a system that does not want you. And you can't understand that it is time to say, I get the point. And what do all people, reasonable people, rational people do when they get the point? They put into play an alternative. You do not value our vote. You do not see the need to meet our particular demands. It's okay. We will dump you and we will dump your party. We will walk away. We will shut you down. We know we have a statistical advantage. No race so far can be won without the black vote. It's as simple as that. No race. That's serious organizing material. It gives you a strategic advantage. Well, what are you doing with it? What the leaders are doing with this strategic advantage is putting us in a coma. They're giving us anesthetics to make us numb to our own suffering and to the open contempt of this party. Notice I keep harping on the Democrats. That doesn't mean I love the Republicans. But we have, at least we have their number. The Democratic Party is doing worse than the Republicans. And we keep forgiving them. I don't understand this. And black folks now need to undertake serious psychological survey of their old selves. What would cause a person ostensibly of sound mind to continue to slit your wrists and bleed over and over and over again just for the satisfaction of saying, look, I'm bleeding over and over and over again? Does that not suggest a kind of mental problem to you? Does that suggest that people with this particular experience and doing this thing over and over again, does it not suggest that there's something wrong here? But it's about the spectacle. The reason Nancy Pelosi was as vapid as she was, A, is because she's vapid. But B, that entire sea of blackness that they're looking out on the mall is not the least bit threatening to them. They understand that. The only thing that she did not do was to come down off of the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and pat each black person on the head, just like them old days. Pat them on the head for luck. For luck that Barack Obama would make good his promise to return her to the leadership of the Congress where she belongs. She was born by divine hand to occupy that particular space forever. This president will on Wednesday join two other presidents, President Carter and President Clinton, pretty much in the same space to commemorate the 50th anniversary. See, everybody knows that they're not going to deal with the 1963 march as an assault on the political system, which it really was. And it was a noteworthy kind of assault because it was chiefly organized among blacks in all spheres, the labor union movement especially. The civil rights movement, yes. The church, yes. Black folks did not have a history of working with each other at this level. That is why it started all the way back in 1941. They knew of the repercussions that they stood to experience by teeing off the administration, the powers that be. And so they behaved. And it took a long time, even for the leaders, to be convinced that this is something they can do. Direct confrontation. We have these people now sticking out their chests because they have mastered the art of betrayal and concession. They mastered the art of carrying out orders to keep their suffering communities in check, to be the valve that regulates just how much steam should be allowed to escape. But they, every bit part and parcel of the means of oppression, and you have to remember that and don't forget it. I am particularly concerned that we would not easily understand why we must part ways with this party and teach it a lesson. Be ruthless and obsessive about our interests. Give it absolutely no means of escape. Make sure to shut it down. Deal some lethal blows to it. Bring it to its knees. Abandon it because it has repeatedly abandoned us and suffered no consequences whatsoever. We have 3 more years of an innocuous presidency. A presidency that absolutely does not intend in any way to really overhaul anything so that black folks could get at least a little bit of breathing room. He doesn't see you. He didn't see the caucus for 790 days. He has never talked to the black press. But don't let his psychological hang-ups deter you from what it is you and I and every black person, every progressive person ought to do. Get out of the Democratic Party. Make sure that it understands what is at issue. Go found yourself a new party if you wish. Start up one. Look at other alternatives. And this brings me to this point as we come to a close of this program today. I have also noticed that in the vacuum, none of the progressive parties have stepped forward either. They do not understand how important it is to step into the breach. They're not reading this right. They're adopting the same mentality, the same modus operandi of the Democratic Party. We'll see you every time there's an election, and we'll come into your community for a hot 20 minutes and tell you, please vote for us. If that is going to be their continued modus operandi, jettison them as well. Give them no consideration. Find yourself somewhere else politically that you can live with yourself and look at your children and look at your neighbors and say, I have understood my role as a citizen. And my role as a citizen is to stop this charade. Because I tell you, it is as lethal, it is as dangerous as any of these so-called undemocratic regimes that the United States is willing to go to war over to assure democracy for them. It's not going to do anything for you here. We have work to do. And the first task is to not get ensnared by this psychological web that is being woven to ensnare us. We have to cut these ties because they have been doing us great harm. We are, objectively speaking, worse off today than we were during the heights of the Depression. This is outrageous, with a black president at the helm. And all these members of Congress, begin to look for political alternatives. Withdraw from the Democratic Party. Smash it. Bring it to its knees, because that's what it deserves. See to your political interests. Because that's how everybody else votes. That's what every other community considers when it decides to whom to give a vote. And remember that people, yes, struggled for the vote, but you've got to be able to vote for something that you could stomach. What is happening now is disgusting. And this past weekend really should have been a collective confession by all involved in the ways that they have betrayed the interests of the people, manipulated the people for their own narrow agendas. And they have no intention of changing their modus operandi. So I leave you with those words today. Carefully consider your next move and step up to the plate as your own political party. I bid you good evening. We'll meet each other again tomorrow. Tomorrow, as you know, is Tuesday. We will return to our standard free forum tomorrow. Thank you. Like a woman when you